Ida, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Hans. Good afternoon, everyone. It's good to see you again. UK is actually our paragraph structuring and organizational expert on the team, so she's the one who has prepared the paper, and she's going to introduce the topic for us today.
So we have prepared two agenda papers for this session. Agenda paper 4 includes questions for you, which we will look at in a minute. And agenda paper 4A includes summary of the board's tentative decisions to date for background information. So we have discussed this topic with you in past sessions, past meetings, I mean. And since our last meetings in December 2018, the board has had 6 board meetings discussing this project. And in those meetings, the board decided on presentation by financial entities, and basic principle there is to include income and expenses from main business activities in operating profit. Also, the board has decided on minimum line items, unusual items, and refined past decisions on management performance measures. The board has now completed substantive discussion and decided to issue an exposure draft by the end of this year. And the staff will ask for permission to start the balloting process in the board meeting next week. So now please look at agenda paper 4. We have 2 questions for you. The first is about the structure of standards as outcome of this project. And this also affects on the structure of the ED, because as you know, the ED should be drafted in the form of final standards. So we consider 3 approaches, which is listed in paragraph 6. And approach 1 is to withdraw IS1 and replace it with a new standard. And approach 2 is to move a part of existing IS1 to a new standard and retain the other part. And approach 3 is to amend IS1 without developing a new standard. And regardless of which approach we would take, we are planning to amend IS7 regarding project proposals on statement of cash flows rather than incorporating it in any new standard. The choice of approach matters because it has several impacts on project. For example, we may need much more time in one approach than the other, or we may be able to restructure the existing requirements in IS1, or even the change of some wording in the existing requirements in IS1 in one approach, but not the other. The staff do not support approach 3 because we think the proposals will substantively change the existing requirements in IS1, so we think it's appropriate to develop a new standard. We analyze advantages and disadvantages of approach 1 and 2 in paragraph 12 through 15. So we'd like to ask your comments on advantages and disadvantages here, and also if there are any alternative approaches you think we should consider, please give advice on that as well.
Yes, I thought it was a good paper, and there's an awful lot in these proposals, these board's decisions so far, that we would welcome. I think you're right to try to balance understandability, and the other consideration is the timing to get on with it, and I think that we would welcome it coming out as soon as quickly. I also agree that approach 3 sounds horrible and shouldn't be considered any further, so I come down, slightly to my surprise, in favour of approach 1. In my paradise of a world, I would not only rewrite IS1, I would combine it with IS8, because I can never remember which is in which place, but I suspect that would be going too far at this stage. So the only other comment that I would add is that hopefully this is the beginning of a long journey rather than the end, and perhaps it would be wise just to consider whether you're closing off anything at this exposure draft stage that you might wish to revisit in the future.
And Andrew, so the question, I mean, we appreciate, of course, you giving us your preferred approach, but what we particularly appreciate is the arguments that made you think one approach is more suitable than the other. And could you maybe just clarify why you thought approach one is perhaps more appropriate than splitting?
I just think it will be clearer if everything is in one place rather than having to refer to two different places to see what's where. I understand that with approach two there might be, you know, some sort of concordance or whatever, but I still think it's really rather
misleading. Everything, Andrew. Sorry, I'm just trying to understand.
Well, everything that will be dealt with in the new standard will be in one place.
I think maybe it's just worth to clarify, I think, with each of or with either of these approaches, so what the board is proposing as a changes to IS1 would all be in the new standard.
Yeah.
So the only thing we are discussing here are things that are outside the scope and don't belong, whether we should move them along. Having said that, I said notwithstanding what Yuki said on statement of cash flows, because we are making only limited proposed changes to statement of cash flows, we didn't think it would make sense to consolidate.
Yeah.
So in sense of moving everything, I think with either of these approaches, everything would be moved to the new standard. It is just that there may or may not be parts of IS1 that are unaffected by project proposals that would remain or get moved along, depending on the approach.
Yeah, and I think that one of the drawbacks of the second approach is that what's left in IS1 would be rather thin and wouldn't stand up as a standard. I also believe you note in the paper that if you go for approach one, it gives you the opportunity to redraft bits of IS1. And given that IS1's history goes back to 1975, it's just possible that some of the language is not the language we would use today. Mm. And so that's another advantage, it seems to me, of approach one.
Okay. Thank you.
Noble?
Yes, thank you. Two points. The first is some of our constituents have asked whether the ISB has any policy of when they issue a new standard and when they just amend an old standard. I didn't think you did, but I just want to clarify whether they had any policy in that area.
And on this, do we have a policy?
Of course we have a policy for everything. Let's discuss this offline.
With judgment, as always.
Okay.
rule-based policy or is it a principle-based policy?
Okay, my second point is very different from Andrew's. We get very concerned when you say that you might be able to improve the drafting without changing the requirements, which is in paragraph 12C in your paper. And unfortunately, I don't think you've ever been successful in that, mainly because any change in the language will create new nuances, and you generally give an impression that you've changed something. And that difference or any change in the nuance is amplified by, at least in the translation process that we go through in translating it from the English to another language. And so if you are going to spend your time and effort emphasizing that you change the language but you're not changing any requirement, it's just, I would suggest that you just keep the language as it is. It's more effective we think that that's better use of your time. And so in this context, we don't necessarily think that approach three is off the table. We are okay to put everything into a new standard. We don't insist on approach three, but if you are to put everything in a new standard, we would like you to just cut and paste the unchanged paragraphs into that new standard without trying to change the language so that you don't get new nuances or different nuances.
Chiara?
Yes. Members were more in favor either of approach one or three. There was some concern about the consequences of splitting IAS 1 in two. There was also broad agreement that irrespective of the approach chosen, the priority should be on timing. And in case you go for approach two, some members suggested to move the remaining unchanged part of IAS 1 into IAS 8.
Alberto?
We are not in favor of approach 2 because to have two standards dealing basically with the same subject doesn't seem very logical. We therefore were left with approach one, which in our view has the disadvantage of more time and, as Nobu said, possibility of having to change something that might, in the language, which might be seen as changing the requirements. So we are in favor of approach three, in spite of Andrew's comment on the previous comment.
Jay Ho.
We support approach one. It is because IUS one is the basic framework for other IPR standards, and therefore this standard IUS one is expected to have integrity on its own. And plus, there seems to be much room for comprehensively revamping wordings and structures of current IUS one. So approach one could serve this purpose as well, I think. And one of the identified disadvantages of approach one is that it might not be clear to stakeholders which parts of the new standard have been changed and which have not, particularly if the drafting of unchanged requirement is amended. However, we think this could be overcome by clearly communicating to stakeholders, for example, by setting out what the ISB intended to revise as opposed to what they did not intend in the basis for conclusions of the exposure draft. Thank you.
Cédric.
Thank you. We, our constituent had no strong views on, as to whether it should be in IS1 or in another standard, but an issue has been, a question has been raised as to whether you would reconsider to transfer some presentation requirements that are in other standards to put them in at the same place, being IS1 or IFRS 18. Is it a question that you also consider? Or?
Give us an example, Cedric, please, if you can.
No specific example, but some of our constituents were...
stock options, for example. Financial instruments.
There is no review to date across all standards. Whether there are some specific presentation requirement in the P&L that could also be placed into IS1. We did not.
Yeah. Okay. So do you mean things like minimum line items potentially that exactly are not transferred over? Nick, we did find examples, sorry to pick you on this. Yeah, and I think we're probably going to reflect it. We haven't decided in the drafting, but yeah, we haven't found many instances. So if you are, not now, but if you notice that there is something that you think should be, we welcome that input.
Nick?
So one of the strong messages I'm hearing, whether we go down approach one, two, or three, is that timeliness is important here in getting on with this, and I would certainly concur with that. So I think an important issue for us and a concern perhaps is that we don't want to start touching those bits of IS1 which are out of scope and start redrafting, because that will just take more time and potentially have unintended consequences. So I think that is a key consideration for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Three AOSSG members sent us their opinion. They are Australia, Hong Kong, and Korea. And the reasons of the member is pretty much a repeat of the Jeho's comment. AOSSG members think, given the nature of the IAS-1, which is providing the framework, financial reporting, the standard needs to be certain every relevant component, regardless that it is considered in this project or not. And also the AOSSG members commonly think the current IAS-1 needs to be updated in terms of words and structure. And finally, it is identified as a disadvantage of approach one by ISG staff. The revised part and the continuing part are mixed, resulting in the confusion. So this can be addressed by the in detail the explanation in
Andrew?
Thanks. I just briefly wanted to prolong the debate by contributing on this issue of redrafting. I've certainly, in my time, had experience of being unwise enough to suggest that the standard says that it means the same as another document, although the words are different, and then being told, oh, no, it doesn't, and people getting very upset about that. So I did think about this in advance of today. However, I think there are ways you can minimise the risk or minimise that danger. First of all, I think the mindset that you approach any paragraphs that are to be substantively retained should not be to say, now, can I write this a little bit better? But you could say, does the existing drafting really make me shudder? And I wish I could write, yeah, and so there is a, I can make a really substantive improvement. I think, too, you could indicate and ask questions on which paragraphs are intended to be substantively the same at the exposure draft stage, and ask people to say, well, do you think this will lead to any changes? And by the way, if there's a change, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And why? Because it might actually, at the margin, there might be some cases where it would be an improvement. I was also quite impressed with the experience of the new conceptual framework, which you might have found. It's very vague to know what actually accounting practices in the world are selected by recourse to the framework, but we just didn't know. But a lot of the framework, not by any means all of it, but some of it was just rewriting what was already there. And we found it impossible to identify anybody that was disturbed by those changes. So that's really the balance of views, of my views on that issue.
Alex?
I didn't got strong views on the subject from my jurisdiction, but now with more personal comment. The reason you raise for now using approach 3, because labeling such important changes as amendment to a standard may mislead investors, mislead stakeholders, actually. My view is that approach 2, you just change the word mislead by confuse stakeholders, because if I get a new standard and it's to keep AS1, that's going to be very difficult. I agree with Andrew that we already have AS8, so we're going to be 3 standards dealing with the same sort of theme. And there is disclosure, there are other elements in other standards also. So I really think the approach 2 is really creating confusion here. I think it's already a fuzzy topic. It's very hard to know what is where. And I think it's important. If you cannot amend it and leave IS1 and put everything there, get a new standard and get rid of IS1. But that's going to be too complicated.
Linda.
Thanks. So in our discussions, we didn't discover any additional advantages or disadvantages. So I think you have to pick what your objective is. So if timeliness is your objective and you honestly believe that approach 1 may take longer, you should consider how much longer and why it would take longer. My staff always gets asked why one thing will take longer than another thing. So I do, you know, I'm very consistent in that regard. And, you know, you may want to also put yourself in the shoes of the stakeholders who are going to be using these. I do want to echo Nobu's comments. If you take current paragraphs and you change the wording, it's going to cause effort, even if you don't intend. And you say a million times in your basis you don't intend to change anything, it's going to take work and effort, and you may end up with changes. Practice has told me that. So I would just encourage you to be mindful of that and pick your battles. I think this is a really important project, again, and it will speak to the relevance of what we do as standard setters. So I certainly would encourage you to move on with it in you know, in the most time-sensitive way.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. The second question is outreach planning. As I said, the board is planning to publish an exposure draft by the end of this year, so it's likely we will be seeking feedback on it during the first half of 2020. So we would like to ask your advice on project topics that are likely to be of particular interest in your jurisdictions and any events that could be used as an opportunity to discuss this project.
Linda.
So if you're going to put an exposure draft out, with this current timing, this is going to be a hot topic in Canada because we put our framework on performance measures out, and that's out there. But what's more interesting probably is our securities regulators exposed a potential new rule on non-GAAP, which would have some overlap with management performance measures, okay? And it was not terribly well received, so they're now rewriting, and they're likely to put out a revised comment document near the end of this year. So it could be that both of those documents are in play in Canada at the same time. So one element in terms of potential outreach, so that will put us in high gear, to be quite honest, in terms of doing lots of outreach within Canada and get people's views. And one of the things that our stakeholders will do, is certainly on the preparer side, is they will be looking at what you're proposing alongside of what the securities regulator is proposing, like it or not, okay? And so one of the things that you may want to think about in terms of either asking questions or discussing is the notion of what you're calling management performance measures, because you're talking about requiring some sort of reconciliation to, you know, what would appear in the financial statements, but one of the things we learned with our framework when we did it is people use different terms for management performance measures, and there's all kinds of different things included. So there's what the securities regulators define legally as non-GAAP, which is quite similar to the U.S. environment. Then there's all the other stuff they will put in their MD&A, like sales per square foot, average revenue per subscriber, number of units, and some of those actually aren't physically capable of being reconciled to the financial statements. And so I think you're going to have to figure out how what you're calling management performance measures fits into that structure so that people will have some context. And so that's the environment in Canada. I would say that if you're interested in participating in our outreach, we will certainly make all of our committee meetings available to you. Often the staff and the board members of the ISB sit through some of our committee meetings by video conference. But we will likely, I would say, do extensive outreach on this particular proposal, given what's happening within our environment.
Noble?
Very difficult for us to choose any topic of particular interest. It's almost everything that you've been discussing that is of high interest to us. And in the same context, I think if you are to do some kind of outreach, it would be you have enough things to discuss as an independent event rather than trying to tag along to any existing event we have that we do. It's, I think you have enough new proposals that we can discuss for many, many hours. And so in that sense, we would welcome you to come to our jurisdiction to meet with our constituents and have a good discussion.
Alberto.
More or less the same as Nobu said. I mean, we are very much willing to have outreach on this subject. Which topic? maybe that in preparation of this outreach, asking these stakeholders, our stakeholders, which one will be more of interest for them, we'll be able to provide this list. But at the moment, I mean, all seems to be very relevant.
Oh, that's in itself good. No? J-Ho.
Yeah. In Korea, how to determine operating profit is likely to draw more attention from stakeholders. According to the ISB tentative decisions to this day, companies will be required to present operating profit as a subtotal in the statement of financial performance. To be more specific, operating profit is defined as residual category that encompasses all other items than the share of profit or loss of integral associate and joint ventures, investing section, and financing section. As you all know, in Korea, listed companies being required to present operating profit on the face of financial, on the face of income statement starting in 2012. And also, we provided explicit guidance on how to determine operating profit. According to this explicit guidance, companies are required to calculate operating profit by subtracting cost of sales and selling and administrative expense from revenue. So it's very definitive guidance. So we observed that there is a kind of gap between the ISB proposed operating profit, which is residual category, and the Korean operating profit, so which is calculated according to explicit guidance. So I think it will be quite challenging for us to get our stakeholders to transition from current operating profit to the new operating profit concept. Thank you.
Thank you. And maybe on that, if I can just clarify a couple of things. I mean, we are aware of this in Korea. I know, but I thought you were going to give the same answer. I was a little bit surprised you made yours a bit broader. But it will be interesting in the outreach in particular there then to find out what will be the consequence for the subtotals that I use today. We know one of the consequences is you can't use label operating profit because the board will now define it and define differently. But it might still be possible that such subtotals would fit into the new structure and therefore entities could continue to present or will not. I don't know that at the moment, but this is one of the things I think would be quite useful to test during the consultation period and work with preparers in your jurisdiction and other jurisdictions that have similar issues to understand that. And maybe just on the comments on how the board has defined operating profit, and I do appreciate that part of that definition is statement that if it is not financing or investing, it is operating. But I would maybe ask for your help in communicating this externally and recognizing we haven't finished our communication materials, that this is not definition per se. So we do have a positive definition. Operating profit is the result of the current wording we use is main business activities, and this is a definition of operating profit. However, given that the board structured entire P&L in the sections rather than just this one subtotal, decision had to be made because mathematically, if you have three definitions and if something somehow doesn't fit in any of these three, you have to make a decision where it is because your total needs to add up. And the board decided in order to manage and achieve the best consistency of classification that making this an operating profit would achieve the best outcome because you remove potential incentives to play with these definitions and say, I want things in or out. So I do appreciate that, therefore, you do get this residual bid, but this residual bid to me is much less significant than the bid that says operating profit is a result from main business activities. And this is the kind of messaging, as I said, we haven't, you know, we are still, Nick is working away his days and nights drafting the document whilst we are finishing off board discussions and we still haven't got materials in front of you. But this is basically what we will be presenting and discussing with stakeholders when the document is out.
Cédric.
Thank you, Hans. Same as previously said, we are interested in many, many topics, so it's difficult to say that we pick only this one. What are you trying to achieve through those outreaches? Because in our jurisdiction, we have a working group following which has been following the different discussion at board level for the last 2 years. So we already have collected a lot of comments that we would be happy to share with you. Is the outreach the opportunity for you to express the future principles of the upcoming standard, or is it an opportunity to get some information for an effect analysis, or just to make sure that I get what you're trying to get
try to collect through that process?
And I mean, that's a great question. We're having this discussion so early because the project is so pervasive. It's going to affect every single preparer, and we want to make sure everyone is as ready as they can be to give input. In your specific question of what type of outreach, we don't have a detailed plan for example, things like the field testing and how we're going to test the proposals, but I would say all elements that you mentioned will come into the play. What we will do in the coming months as we develop the document, we'll also develop a specific plan that will include, you know, exactly if we're doing field testing, what kind of field testing, and, you know, of course, we will be touched with you with specific plans so that we can kind of leverage off each other rather than everyone doing, you know, things slightly differently. But discussion today was really meant as a start of that process, just to kind of start giving people heads up, and if there is anything that we should leverage on ourselves, just to make sure we build it on, because I think no matter how long common period, we just need to start planning now, because the project is so pervasive and we just want to maximize the use and maximize the outreach to people that are affected. So
just to say that we are happy to share in any type of any form, maybe outreach is not for us the preferred way, because we have that working groups that has been working on that, so which involves a lot of constituents. So if we can provide you with any kind of material, we are happy to share that.
Yeah. I mean, I think at a minimum, and Aida, feel free to jump in, but part of what we're looking to achieve with the outreach is to engage with the stakeholders and just encourage them to respond back to us. So explain the proposals in the ED. If there's something that's causing confusion, explain that so that when we get the comment letters back, it's really clear what we were trying to achieve, and we have the good feedback to take it to the next step. But it's looking really to get the feedback from the stakeholders.
Chiara?
I wanted to express our interest in doing this, in supporting you and in doing testing and outreach. All the topics are relevant, but I think it's important also the approach, involving together users and preparers all together in the same place, with engaging in a dialogue. And then one of our members also mentioned the presentation of reverse factoring in primary financial statements as a possible topic, in addition to the others that you have already mentioned.
Thank you for that.
You just said that.
Andrew?
Thanks. As others have said, it's quite difficult to know which of the topics that will be addressed in this project will excite most interest. I expect that several of them will, and that there will be strong views on each side. However, there are a couple of things that I would expect some UK stakeholders to flag as things that they wished had been addressed here. One is that the cash flow statement, and I think they might be disappointed in the very limited changes that seem to be proposed in that direction, while I would hope they would welcome what is proposed. And the other is easier cross-reference to the balance sheet and the income statements, so that it is easier to follow things through. Obviously, I can't make any firm commitment, but I would very much hope that the FRC would join with the IESB and perhaps with EFRAG or whatever in organising at least one outreach event, because I think it's an important enough project. Views will be very strongly held, as I said. So I think that is something that we would very much, we should very seriously consider, and I would hope that we could work together on that.
All right.
The AUSSG members think the two issues would be of particular interest. One is operating profit, and second one is the management performance measure. As for the operating profit, according to tentative decision, it's described as a residual profit after deducting the investing and financing. But it might be different from the usage. Use and understanding of the operating income in practice, that is on concern. And the second is for the management performance measure. The usefulness of this information could be issued. And additionally, the Australia, how the this proposal would impact on the disclosure of accounting policy would be issued. And the Hong Kong said the classification of integral and non-integral the associate and joint venture would be the possible issue. Thank you.
All right. The end.
If it's helpful, I will maybe just summarize what I took away from discussion and first question, particularly on our approach to drafting, and it's a little bit similar to discussion we had in the team, that there's no clear, like there's one, and this is the right way to go ahead, but I haven't heard anyone having a strong view as of the approach, but I think what you have done is emphasized a couple of things to pay attention on. I've heard the timeliness being emphasized as important factor, that we don't kind of get carried away with an approach that will defer the improvements that this project is bringing to the financial reporting. I also heard, I guess there were different views on improving or not improving the drafting of IS1 that is not affected by the project proposals, and I take away the words of caution you have given and the prior experience and advice in that regard. And, you know, I think I heard also comments about potential for confusion with some of these approaches and, you know, just to be mindful of that. So we will, we haven't made a decision as of yet, but I think we need to make one pretty soon to just progress with drafting as a staff, but we will take all of this into account and you will find out what happens. And thank you for the comments on communications plan, and as again, we will continue our discussions with you as we are closer to the publication and liaise to arrange events in your jurisdictions.
Okay, thank you, Aida. Let's take a break until 3:10.